A blast to right. Will it straighten out? It will. And Carlos Santana picks up Merrifield and the Royals. A two-run home run to right.
And the Royals win yet again. This time they take down the Tigers for a four-game sweep. They had never done that before against Detroit in Detroit. First four-game sweep for the Royals since 1999 when they took four in a row at the Metrodome in Minnesota against the Twins back in 1999. Royals win. Greg Holland, oh man, it looked like it was going to be a tie game. Royals caught a break. The ball barely stayed in the yard. Ended up being a leadoff triple in the eighth inning, but then Holland was able to work out of that amazing jam. And then Josh Staumont came in for his second save of his career and got it done in the ninth, and the Royals hang on and win 3-2. They have the best record in American League yet again. They are 14-7 by percentage points over the A's, who are 15-8. The Royals have won 10 of their last 13, and they matched their second best start in team history through 21 games. The only other time was the 2003 team, which I know that one very well, when they started 9-0 and went 17-4 to start the year and did not make the playoffs, but led by 7.5 games at the All-Star break that year. Remember Jose Lima and others that year. And Tony Pena was the manager of the Royals at that time. So the Royals still have some games to play here in April as well. And the Royals continue to play good baseball. They're 14-7. Mike Matheny on the early season success of his squad.
I don't want to sound arrogant, but we're expecting good things to happen. These guys are expecting somebody's going to pick us up. Somebody's going to be able to make something happen to give us a chance. And if not, we're all just going to dig our heels in and figure out a way to scrap our way through it. And we've had some of the above. And we've had different guys come through. I want them expecting good things to happen, not walking in here. Part of that was our messaging. You know, you win three games, it's real easy when that momentum starts to swing to go to your mind and say, you know what, we've got three. It's a good series. Really good teams don't do that. It's relentless and push. It's relentless in the fight. And you don't give anything away.
Royals are 6-0 in one-run games this season. That's a sign of a really good baseball team. They've also won 58 consecutive games when leading after the seventh inning. That is the longest active streak in the majors. They haven't lost when leading after the seventh since June 21st of 2019. It matches the second longest run in club history, only trailing 111-game stretch, which, if you remember, that was the 14 and then into 15 when they had that lockdown bullpen, of course, and made the World Series back-to-back years. Scott Barlow worked out of a jam in the seventh with back-to-back walks and then struck out the side. And then I mentioned Greg Holland working out of the leadoff triple jam. And Brad Keller, a solid start. He had to labor a little bit, but he goes 6 innings, 8 hits, gets a quality start, allowed 2 runs. Royals starters in the series against the Tigers were 4-0, ERA of 1.90, 5 earned runs in 23 innings, 29 strikeouts, just 4 walks. And the pitching staff as a whole yielded only 5 runs over the 4 games. The bullpen did its part certainly yesterday as well. So the Royals do get the win. Santana, of course, with the home run that you heard of there in the third, that gave them the 2-0 lead. Then it was tied at 2, and then able to manufacture a run on a Whit Merrifield sacrifice fly on top of the fifth. And then goose eggs the rest of the way, as the Royals, not a single player in that lineup had more than one hit, but they scattered out the 8 hits, get the 3 runs, Staumont the save, Holland and Barlow holds, Keller gets the second win of the year, is now 2-2, and the Royals take a 4-game series. They sweep it in Detroit. Royals back in action, and that'll be tonight, 5:35. Royals will be in Pittsburgh, take on the Pirates, who are 11-11. Jacob Junis, the Royals' number 5 starter on the hill, and then tomorrow, the Royals will be in Pittsburgh again at 5:35. Mike Minor will take the hill in game 2 of a short series. The Royals have Thursday off, and then Friday they'll be back in division at the Minnesota Twins, who are scuffling a little bit and had to miss a few games due to COVID-19 implications. Probably the only bad thing is that Salvador Perez left the game yesterday with some discomfort with his thumb. He is day-to-day, so we'll see how long he's out. I would guess he's going to probably be out tonight, but we shall see. Maybe rest him the next 2 games and have an off day and have him back for the Twins division rival on Friday. So the Royals 4 straight wins are over the Tigers. They've won 5 in a row, and they are in first place in the American League Central and the best record in American League. And it I'd love to say that it makes me feel good when my baseball team is in first place. The Royals have a 2-game lead over the White Sox, who are starting to come on now. White Sox have won 4 in a row, and the Twins are 7 games out of first. They're the favorite to win this division along with the White Sox. They are 7-14. And just to give you an idea of run differential, the Royals are plus four. We mentioned they're 6-0 in one-run games. The Red Sox lead the East. They're plus 20. The A's lead the West. They're minus one. The Mets lead the NL East. They're minus 11. The Brewers lead the NL Central. They're plus 10. The Dodgers and the Giants are tied to top their division now. They're well over. Dodgers plus 30 in run differential. The Giants 22. So the Royals kind of define the odds, but that's what happens when you win 6 1-run games. Your run differential won't be a lot. Royals are 6-2 on the road this year, but the White Sox are coming on. The White Sox, in contrast, are 21, plus 21 in run differential. So the Royals did what they did supposed to do. They beat the worst team in their division, took all four games. Tigers are minus 38, and they're 7-16 on the season record-wise. So Royals get it done again, and back in action tonight in Pittsburgh. Local sports, we turn over to Dusty.
Yes, looking at yesterday's results that we have so far, the Beloit baseball team was competing at Republic County yesterday. Republic County gets a sweep over Beloit. They won the first game 5-4 and took the second 13-9. So Republic County is now 3-7 overall, 2-2 in the league, and Beloit's 2-12 and 1-7 after the matchups on Monday in that doubleheader. So also in golf on Monday, the Northern Plains League meet was held in Tipton. As on the team side of things, Osborne took first place with a 325. Lakeside was second with a 350. Tipton finished third. Rock Hill's fourth and St. John's fifth. Individual top 10 finishers are all from the area. Kylan Cunningham won the individual title there in the NPL League meet with a 73. That was four strokes better than Zach Rose of Tipton in second. Brandon Bethford of Osborne was third. Fourth place finish for Grady Walters of Osborne, winning a tiebreaker over his teammate Dayton Lance of Osborne, who finished fifth. And Lance Kaser for the Bulldogs was sixth. Reed Walsh of Lakeside, seventh. Jacob Berry from Rock Hills was eighth. Cooper Brown of Lakeside, ninth. And Taryn Winkle from the Knights finished in 10th place there. Also, the Concordia Invitational, first place finish for Jackson Raider of Marysville, who was 14 strokes better than Jackson Pinckney of Smith Center in second place in an 82 there. Concordia won the team title at 359, Marysville second, Smith Center third. And you can find all the results for those golf meets that we just mentioned and baseball and softball from the area on Monday at ncksports.com. Coming up today, we do have high school baseball. Lincoln Sylvan Lucas at Ellsworth. The doubleheader starts at 4 o'clock this afternoon. Abilene at Concordia with a doubleheader at 4:30. Softball doubleheader also at 4:30 for Abilene at Concordia. And then Sylvan Lucas Lincoln is hosting Pratt Skyline in Sylvan Grove this afternoon at 4 o'clock. Boys golf today, Rock Hills Invitational at 1 o'clock this afternoon. Rock Hills, St. John's, Lakeside, Tipton, and Pike Valley competing from the area there. And the Concordia boys golf team is at Abilene this afternoon, this morning, I should say, that just got started here at 9 o'clock. So that's a look at what their local schedule is today. Again, all the latest local sports notes can be found at ncksports.com.
All right. Did you mention the KBCA again? I know we mentioned it yesterday.
Yeah, Lauren Dubert's been selected to play in the Kansas Basketball Coaches Association All-Star Game from St. John's High School, and St. John's Tipton there, and that'll be coming up this June. You can read much more about her and that game that will be played at Kansas Wesleyan at ncksports.com. We've got the complete rosters listed there if you're looking to see who made it. Again, Lauren was really the only area participant that was selected for the Kansas Basketball Coaches Association All-Star Game this summer.
All right, the Chiefs have a new left tackle, as you probably know by now. As Chiefs fans, you should be excited about this. It's a kid. I say a kid. He's 24. He's going to be 25 next week. He's in the prime of his career. He's a third-round draft pick out of Oklahoma. And the reason he fell in the draft is because he ran a slow 40 time. Because, you know, running 40-yard dashes is super important as a lineman. He only bench pressed 225 14 times. It just goes to show you that the combine is flawed. I always love how the guys can run these fast 40s. And I'm like, well, yeah. It's easier to run without helmet and pads. And then, oh, yeah, can they catch the ball? Can they run a route? Can they get off the line of scrimmage? Oh, well, he's not super fast. Yeah, but does he have great moves to negate a good blocker so he can get to the quarterback? Is he just smarter? Does he got a lower center of gravity? He could be smarter than some of these guys that are supposedly more athletic. It is interesting. Orlando Brown, of course, his dad played in the NFL for various teams and then died at a very young age, at the age of 40, his dad did. But Orlando Brown is the new left tackle against the Chiefs. He played right tackle for the Ravens last year. The Ravens spent a lot of money on Ronnie Stanley, and that was their left tackle. And so he wanted to play left tackle. And so he asked to be traded, and the Ravens obliged, and they traded him to the Chiefs, of all people, which I'm super excited about and still surprised the Ravens did this. trading him to the Chiefs because the Washington football team and some other teams are interested. I think if you would have waited a little bit closer to the draft, you might have got a better deal. But the Ravens went ahead and shipped him to the Chiefs to fill probably their biggest hole on their offense. And Brown was introduced at a press conference yesterday, and he is excited to be with the Chiefs and their new starting left tackle.
First off, I just want to say thank you to the Hunt family and, you know, the Chiefs organization for making this happen. I'm so appreciative. I'm so thankful. I'm so blessed to have the opportunity to play left tackle in this league, which is a dream that, you know, I set for myself as a young kid. And to have the opportunity to play here for this organization is just so special, given the history of everything that's going on here. Everything that they've done lately, Coach Reed and his history, Pat and everything that he's done and is going to do, it's so special. And I'm so blessed and thankful to be here and part of this organization.
Orlando Brown is the left tackle for the Chiefs, and he could be for many years to come. He was very emotional when he found out that he had been traded to KC.
Man, it's crazy. I was in Norman, Oklahoma in the Everest in the indoor facility taking pass tests when my agent gave me a call. And, you know, he was just like, are you ready to be a Chief? And honestly, I was a little bit overwhelmed. And it was a little hard for me to wrap my mind around, you know, getting traded to a situation like this, which I think is the best in the league, you know, going from what I came from. And man, it was just like I said, it was just so overwhelming emotionally. And I'm so happy. I'm so blessed to be here.
He's a big guy, 6'6", 350 pounds. He's your left tackle to protect the $500 million man, Patrick Mahomes, and he knows what his job is to keep Mr. Mahomes clean.
It's great, man, having a mobile quarterback. I have nothing negative to say about it. You know what I mean? There's times that, you know, they make me right or I make them right. You know, but, man, I look forward to keeping him clean. You know, whether he has a broken leg, healthy ankle, whatever the deal is, I look forward to keeping him clean, man. He shouldn't have to run around because of me, period.
Listen, Patrick Mahomes has a broken leg. Somebody hasn't done their job, okay?
Yes.
It's very simple. Somebody on the line didn't do their job, more than likely. I guess he could be scrambling. Yeah, he's scrambling around. He means he has pressure. He decided to just take off and run. Okay, that wouldn't be the line's fault. The Chiefs, of course, giving up a first, third, and fourth round pick in exchange for a fifth round pick in 2022 and get Baltimore's second round pick this year and also a sixth rounder next year for the Ravens. It equates out to basically the Ravens get a first round pick for Orlando Brown. Now, the Chiefs, of course, are not going to call this a 1 year rental. He is under contract this year, $3.384 million of base salary. He'll count $3.6 million against the cap. But the Chiefs can use a franchise tag on Brown to keep him off the free agent market next March. And right now, there is no plan for the Chiefs to extend an extension to Mr. Brown. Let him play out his deal. Then you can tag him if he can't come to terms with a long-term deal. Brown saying all the right things, that he wants to be with the Chiefs for a very long time.
I want to be here for a long time. I do. And, you know, I'm going to make sure I take care of my part, and that's handling my business on the football field. As far as the offensive scheme here, I've watched a lot of film on Kansas City, just like I'm sure every other NFL team or NFL player has. I know a little bit about the system. I look forward to learning a lot more, but I'm just excited, man, to be in the system, to have an opportunity to really showcase my talents.
So Orlando Brown is your left tackle, and yes, if he plays well this year, the Chiefs will find a way to keep him, especially, I mean, you think about this for a second. Mahomes, how old's Mahomes right now? 25, 26, 25?
25, I'm pretty sure.
Okay, so now you have a left tackle to protect Mahomes for a very long time, as long as he stays healthy. You have a quarterback that's under contract for a very long time. You are in pretty good shape there, and those are two premium positions in the National Football League. I mean, quite honestly, left tackle and quarterback are two, along with pass rushers, are the highest paid players in the league. Mm-hmm. And the Chiefs have certainly spent money on Frank Clark. They spent money on Chris Jones. They spent a lot of money, or will, on Orlando Brown. Now, the question to me is this, and I know we're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit. Assuming Orlando Brown plays well, assuming he doesn't get hurt, what do the Chiefs do? Do they tag him next year? Who knows? Do they give him a long-term deal? If they give him a long-term deal, they can't give everybody long-term deals. I mean, it's very simple. Chris Jones is on a four-year deal. This will be year two. Mahomes, of course, his deal will get more expensive as they get further down the road, although early on the contract, it's not that bad at all. Tyrann Mathieu is going to be a free agent at the end of this year. I would think he's priority one to give him an extension if the Chiefs believe he can play for extended period of time, or maybe the Chiefs will just go ahead and let him play it out and then say, hey, you know, they'll let him play it out, and they'll look at him, they'll look at Brown, and they say, okay, who's more important for us in the future? And I would say it'd be Brown, to be quite honest with you. And then Frank Clark, I think they're going to cut bait with him after this year. Mm-hmm. I'd have to look at the cap numbers, but we know it's a much you can deal with a little bit more, certainly this upcoming season after next year, than obviously right now. So there would be some money coming off the books there. So I think the Chiefs could certainly sign Orlando Brown long term. The question is, can they sign Tyrann Mathieu and Orlando Brown both long term? And I don't know. It just really depends. I mean, Kelsey's locked up for a while. You know, Hill's taken care of. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is on a rookie contract, so you don't have to worry about him. 1 year deal with a center. Allegretti doesn't cost a lot. He's your backup center right now. Kyle Long's on a 1 year deal. Tardif, I don't know how much he has left on his deal. Rimmers, if I remember right, was a 1 year deal, and he's a backup. Niang's on a rookie deal. So you look at the linemen, really, the Tardif contract is going to get easier to handle or stomach, or maybe even you cut him after this season upcoming, let him go. It'd be Toomey, and it would be Orlando Brown. That would be your left guard, your left tackle would be the most expensive players on the team, along with your quarterback. And then, of course, Chris Jones, and then I'm assuming Frank Clark would be gone. And then you have to decide, all right, can we find a way to give Tyrann Mathieu his money to keep him, because he is the heart and soul of that defense. He is the leader of that defense. So the Chiefs have a plan, trust me. They wouldn't give up what they gave up in draft capital to rent a guy for a year and then not sign him or tag him. So yeah, he's going to be a Chief for at least 2 years, and more than likely he'll be a Chief for a good 5 years or so, as long as he stays healthy. And that makes me, and I'm sure Patrick Mahomes, very, very happy that he's got a guy at 6'6", 350, 355 protecting his blind side for the foreseeable future, assuming he and Brown stay healthy.
Yeah, it'd make me happy for sure to have somebody like that over there, especially after what he went through toward the end of the season this past year, so, and then the Super Bowl. So, yeah, you just definitely need all that you can to continue to take the next step there. And they've done all the work they need to on the line. And I think that, like you said, I think they didn't go into this. Brett Veach isn't like, oh, yeah, we're just going to have him for 1 year and get rid of all this other stuff.
Yeah, so, we can't afford him.
They've got something figured out or worked out, or in their mind they know what they're trying to accomplish here. And I don't think that's lip service from Orlando Brown. I think he really wants to be here in Kansas City, and really wants to be a part of what's going on there. And for the long term, like you said, if he can stay healthy, and that's what everything in sports is all based on, right? Making sure everybody stays healthy, and if that happens, then you can get those kind of contracts, and hopefully they work out for you down the road.
Why wouldn't you want to be a part of the Chiefs in the future? Yeah. Mahomes is your quarterback. Andy Reid's your coach. You've been in this organization has been in the Super Bowl 2 straight years and 3 straight AFC title games. The Ravens haven't been able to do any of that.
Yeah.
So he's moving on up in the world from Baltimore to Kansas City, and honestly makes the Chiefs even better and tougher to beat. And Baltimore loses a Pro Bowl tackle who they felt like they couldn't sign long-term anyway. That was part of the reason why they traded him in that, and he wanted to play left tackle. And he had nothing to good thing to say about the Ravens yesterday as well, that, you know, it is kind of interesting. They agreed to take care and move on. A lot of times you'll say, you know what, you're under contract. We're going to keep you. You're valuable. We're not going to try to find a place. And then you trade him to the reigning AFC champion, mm-hmm. two-time defending AFC champions.
Team that your own quarterback said was your kryptonite, right?
You can't beat when you're a member of the Ravens, so if you can't beat them, join them. But they actually traded. You know, that'd be like the Oklahoma City Thunder are very close to beating the Warriors. Let's trade Durant to the Warriors for some draft picks. That's not what happened, of course. It was free agency. In this case, Orlando Brown got traded from a good team to a great team. That's just that doesn't happen very often.
No.
Speaking of greatness, Russell Westbrook's demise has been greatly exaggerated. He struggled early with the Wizards this year, but now he's playing some good ball. Triple-double in 14 of the last 17 games. Wizards won 8 in a row until they lost last night to the San Antonio Spurs. They won 10 of the last 11. Spurs won in overtime last night. Westbrook, 22 points, 14 assists, 13 rebounds. That gave him a grand total of 12 triple-doubles in the month of April, and the month isn't over yet. That breaks a record previously held by Wilt Chamberlain, which was set back in March of 1968. The triple-double was Westbrook's 30th of the season, but more importantly, it was the 175th of his career. He's now 6 short of tying the all-time record for triple-doubles, which is 181 by Oscar Robertson. And, of course, Westbrook is only 32, and he can play several more seasons. He's in pretty good shape as well. Keeps his body in good shape, And it's pretty amazing what Westbrook is putting together. And his team is getting better as well. And they're working their way up the standings into that play-in tournament in the East. And then it's all about, you know, getting hot at the right time. And so Westbrook does play well again last night, but it wasn't enough. Crazy game. Spurs beat the Wizards 146-143 in overtime. DeMar DeRozan with 37 lead the Spurs. Bradley Beal had 45. And when Bradley Beal scores over 40, the Wizards just don't win.
It's crazy.
It is crazy. He had 45 last night.
I mean, it makes sense if you really think about the team aspect of it and some of the things we've heard about other guys and stars in the past, right? When their scoring average goes a little bit down and everybody else is scoring, their wins go up. But it's just wild. In this NBA today, that's not always the case. Like when people score a lot of points, the teams are going to win because everybody else is also scoring a lot of points. Like, yeah, if somebody scores 40, I mean, these teams are scoring 120 points a game, right?
Yeah.
There's still a lot more points to go around.
A lot higher scoring league than it used to be.
I mean, that's not average 120 points a game, but some teams are close to that.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. The Hawks beat the Bucks the other day, and they turn around and lose to the lowly Pistons, 186 last night. Lakers beat the Magic 114-103. The Sixers beat the Thunder 121-90. Joel Embiid with 21 to lead the way. And then we mentioned the Spurs over the Wizards in overtime, breaking their 8-game winning streak. The Suns snapped the Knicks 9-game winning streak. Devin Booker 33 for the Suns. Chris Paul was clutch, as he usually is. Derrick Rose led the way with 22 for the Knicks, but the Knicks finally lose. The Raptors beat the Cavaliers 112-96. And the Heat lost to the Bulls 110-102. Jimmy Butler had 33 in that one. Timberwolves beat the Jazz for the second time in 3 days. And the Jazz are 44-17, and the T-Wolves are 18-44. Yeah, it's hard to figure out, isn't it? Mike Conley with 26 for the Jazz. They lost by one at Minnesota. The Pelicans beat the Clippers 120-103. DeMarcus Cousins is a member of the Clippers. He had 16 points, 11 rebounds. He's been signed for the remainder of the season. So it is interesting. When you look at the Nets, you look at the Clippers, and you look at the Lakers. It's like all three of those teams have just grabbed a whole bunch of former All-Stars to load their team up and make a run. Nuggets beat the Grizzlies 120-96. You know, Nuggets are hanging in there without Jamal Murray. They really are. Jokic with a big game, 24 points, 15 rebounds. Michael Porter Jr. starting to play really well. Nuggets win over a good Grizzly team, 120-96. And the Kings beat the Mavericks. Luka with 24 points, 7 rebounds, 8 assists. But the Kings beat the Mavericks last night, 113-106. So you take a look at the NBA standings right now in regards to the playoff situation. The Nets have a 1-game lead in the East over the 76ers, and Harden is hurt right now with a hamstring, and Durant's missed a ton of games, and Irving's missed time, and yet the Nets still have the number one seed. If that doesn't tell you who the best team in the East is, I don't know what is. The Bucks are in the 3 seed, the Knicks are the 4, tied with the Hawks, and the Celtics are a 6 right now, Miami's a 7, the Hornets are the 8, the Pacers are the 9, the Wizards now are trying to hold off the Bulls. The Bulls have played better ball lately. The Wizards have a 1-game lead over the Bulls to stay in that 10 spot, to be in that little mini play-in tournament. Play-in tournament involves the 7, 8, 9, and 10 seeds trying to play their way into the 7 and 8 spots in the full bracket of the NBA playoffs. If you didn't know, something new they instigated and implemented in the bubble during COVID last season. In the West, the Jazz have a 1-game lead over the Suns, a 2-game lead over the Clippers for number one seed. The Nuggets now are 4 games clear of the Lakers for the 4. So the Lakers, it looks like they're going to be no better than a 5. Mm-hmm. In this situation, and they could possibly slide below the Mavericks. The Mavericks, this is important. The Mavericks didn't want to be in this play-in tournament, nor does anybody. That's, you know, at the 6-7 spot. Now, if you're a 10, you want to be in it, obviously, or a 9. The Mavericks now have a game lead over Portland for the 6 spot, and then the Grizzlies are a game back of Portland, and Portland's lost 5 in a row. So there you go. That opens the door for some teams. And then the Spurs have won 3 in a row. So now the Spurs are only 2 games behind the Mavericks for the 6th spot, but they're only half a game ahead of the Warriors for the 10th spot. So there's a lot of jockeying for position going on, and you got about 11, 12 games left in the regular season because, of course, 72-game regular season instead of 82 this year.
I've learned over the last few years as a Spurs fan, once the big three got blasted up, right, and it's been kind of a struggle since Leonard got traded, but I've learned that I really, really wish the Spurs were in the East.
Oh, yeah.
Because every year it's like they're fighting, but they're like 2 wins away from 5 or 6, right, or they're 2 losses away from being totally out of this thing.
Yeah.
And it's like I don't like this.
Right.
I got spoiled, obviously, as a Spurs fan for a long time. But
right.
Usually it's like, oh, are they going to be the one or the two or the three, right?
Right, yeah, you've been spoiled.
And now it's like...
Yeah, you've been spoiled.
Oh, man.
You've been spoiled. Kind of like KU fans spoiled that they win the Big 12 every year, and then this year they were five games out of the and finished second, and it's like a horrible year or something.
Yeah.
Or lose the second round of the NCAA tournament. We all get a little bit spoiled. if the Spurs were in the East, it really wouldn't be a lot better, though, believe it or not. Do you know where they would be seated in
They'd
the East?
Would they be six right now?
They would be eight.
Eight.
They'd be eight. They'd be tied for the seventh. Actually, they would be tied for seventh with Miami. But they'd only be a half game out of the sixth spot. Half game out of the sixth spot. Right now, they are two games out of the sixth spot. So, really, it's not as big a difference as you might think. About a game and a half difference.
Because the Knicks went on that long winning streak. That's probably – where are the Knicks at on
– The Knicks are the four seed right now.
Yeah, yeah. They went on – because they went on that long winning streak. Right. And kind of changed things up a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. But it's not as obvious as you might think.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting. But, yeah, I mean, to me, it's the Nets and the Sixers and the Bucks are the three best teams in the East and the West. I mean, to me, it's the Jazz, Suns, Clippers, and Lakers because I can't go with the Nuggets without Jamal Murray in the playoffs.
No, not in the playoffs. I mean, they can win some games right now in regular season, but best of seven series, I don't think they're going to fare well without Murray.
Right now, you're looking at the Lakers against the Nuggets, and the Lakers get by the Nuggets, they take on the Jazz, and if they get by the Jazz, they're taking on either the Suns or the Clippers. That's a tough road to defend your championship, and that's just to get to the finals. You know, where the Nets, you look at the Nets, they're going to play Charlotte or Indiana. That shouldn't be a problem.
No.
And then they're going to face either New York or Atlanta, and then maybe Philadelphia or Milwaukee. I mean, the Nets have a much easier path to the finals than the Lakers do. Mm-hmm. So and the question then is if the Lakers make the finals and against the Nets, that's what I think everybody wants to see with all the superstars. Kind of two super teams against each other. But will the Lakers have enough in the tank? Because the Nets probably are going to have an easier path there. And also, Durant and Harden should be well rested with their injuries coming back fully healthy. Although, LeBron will be too once he comes back. And AD just started coming back for the Lakers. But the Lakers really are in a spot where they're not going to catch. It doesn't look like they're going to move up to the four. And it doesn't even matter if they move up to the four. Woohoo, they host the Nuggets. They're not moving up to the three. So the Lakers are stuck at the four and a five. Of course, they want to completely stay out of the play-in tournament, which I think they're going to be safe there with AD back, and then they get LeBron back in a few weeks. So I still think the Lakers – I'm not going to count the Lakers out at all once they get healthy. But the Clippers with Ty Lue will see the impact he has in the playoffs. The Suns, they're the team I'm cheering for. I love Chris Paul, and I love the Suns. How they play. I like Booker, a young player, and it's just amazing how they've taken off since they played in the bubble with that play-in tournament last year going 8-0, and then you get Chris Paul, and you immediately shoot up to the top of the Western Conference. So the team I'm cheering for in the West, that's the Phoenix Suns. I mean, if the Jazz make it, that's fine. I'm cool with it. I'm cool with the Clippers. I'm cool with the Nuggets. I don't want the Lakers to repeat. I'm all for the Lakers losing first round to the Nuggets, which I do not see happening at all without Jamal Murray. I would love to see the Suns in the finals. How about this? The Suns and the Nets in the finals, and Steve Nash is coaching in the finals against his former organization.
Mm-hmm.
And so would be Mike D'Antoni. Mike D'Antoni was head coach of the Suns. He's an assistant for Steve Nash for the Nets. How weird and wild would that be? Chris Paul would be going up against James Harden, who was his teammate in Houston, and they didn't get along at the end.
Yeah.
Ooh, there's some juicy plot lines there, isn't it?
Yeah.
That would be
something tells me that's not what the NBA wants to see, though. But
I don't care what the NBA wants
but,
to see.
But yeah,
the NBA wants to see the Nets or the Sixers against the Lakers or the Clippers. The Nets want to, or the NBA wants to see the Nets or the Sixers against the Clippers or the Lakers.
Yeah,
that's pretty much it. If you got Sixers and Embiid versus the Clippers and George and Leonard, or the Lakers and the Sixers, or Lakers and the Nets. Honestly, you know what they want? They want Lakers Nets. That would be the one. That would be the one you'd want, no doubt. I don't really want to see it. I'd like to see, like I said, the Suns in it. I'd like to see you know what they really don't want? They don't want Suns Bucks or Jazz Bucks.
That's what I was just going to say.
Jazz
I
Bucks.
I really want to see what I would actually really want to see was just to buck the trend, you know, and knock the NBA down a peg, you know, the big wigs and have the Jazz or the Bucks and the Suns in the finals.
Bucks and the Suns, Bucks and the Jazz
for what they want.
Yeah.
For ratings and things like that.
Yeah.
But
I tell you what's interesting, you're looking at rematches here in the Western Conference because You're looking at Dallas and the Clippers. They met in the semis in the bubble, and that was a pretty good series. The Clippers won in six. Nuggets-Lakers would be a rematch of the Western Conference Finals.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a few rematches there. The Celtics and the Bucks, what a juicy first-round series that'd be in the East. And I'll tell you what, the Knicks-Hawks would be an entertaining series. Julius Randle, Trae Young, the Sixers and the Heat, Jimmy Butler against his former teammate because he was there in Philadelphia with Embiid and Ben Simmons. I mean, the Sixers and the Heat, that's a juicy the Sixers aren't guaranteed to win that series.
No.
At all. So there are some interesting matchups right now when it comes to NBA playoffs when you look ahead. And then if you're looking at play-in teams or in the play-in tournament, you know, who's the two dangerous teams? Well, to me, it's very easy. The Warriors are dangerous if Curry's hot. And the Wizards are dangerous because of Beal and Westbrook. They could carry their team to win a series or get in and win a series and steal one. Now, the problem is they get in, they're going to have to face the Nets. And, of course, the Warriors would have to face the Jazz. But, listen, Steph Curry can do some amazing things. I don't think they're good enough collectively as a team to beat the Jazz in a seven-game series. But sometimes a guy can carry you to a few wins, and all of a sudden all the pressure's on the higher seed and the Warriors play with house money if the Warriors even get that far.
Man, I mean, Steph Curry, I know, was young before Clay was Clay, but I just remember that series when they played the Spurs, and, like, he almost beat them single-handedly.
Yeah.
And it's like, the way he's playing right now and the stretch that he had been on there, I don't count him out in any situation.
I think if you're the Jazz or the Suns, you don't want to face Golden State as a
winner. I know I don't want to face Golden State if the Spurs get into one of those play-in games, right?
Well, now, you're going to have to play them first.
I would rather get in some position where I don't have to play, you don't have to play the Warriors for a one-game winner-take-all and you're moving on situation.
Yeah. Well, your best bet right now is to move up to the eight spot and then play Portland and beat them in the one game, and then you lock yourself into the seven and have to play the Warriors.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting, I will say that. That's for sure. Matthew Derrick at Chiefs Digest will join us tomorrow on the Sports Ticket to talk about the Orlando Brown trade and what the Chiefs might be looking to do with their draft picks coming up on Friday. The draft starts on Thursday with the first round. The Chiefs, of course, have no first-round pick. They traded out to the Ravens for Orlando Brown. The Chiefs will have two second-round picks coming up on Friday, 58th and 63rd overall late in the second round. So we'll ask Matthew Derrick, you know, where he thinks the Chiefs will go. We talked about that yesterday. Could they go corner, athletic linebacker, edge rusher, maybe a wide receiver in the second round? We'll ask him his thoughts on that coming up tomorrow on the Sports Ticket. Anything else to add, Dusty, before we let everyone go?
I think we got it covered.
All righty. Have a great day, everyone. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.